Right, so I wanted to start by thanking Rob and Lucien for putting together this nice workshop and for giving me the chance to speak here. So the stuff I want to talk about today is a work in progress, so I'm not quite sure where the conclusions lead yet, but the basic idea is to take a process matrix like this that may generally have indefinite causal structure and see if we can twist it around and find some physical system where we can implement, I would argue, a simulation of it, so within known physics, that will teach us something interesting about the indefinite causal structure. The motivation for this is twofold. On the one hand, I think I don't need to argue that indefinite causal structures are interesting resources. You can do interesting things with them. And therefore, it would be nice if we had a way of actually building them beyond the cases of the switch and variations thereof, but also going to more exotic causal structures. The second reason to look specifically at how you can build something like that is usually when you sit down and try to build it, you figure out whether you've really understood it, or if not, then in which ways you haven't understood it. And specifically, colleagues of mine in Innsbruck and I have been thinking about whether you could get a learning algorithm, which is something that we also work with, to maybe build interesting process matrices. And in order to do that, the first thing you need to do in this machine learning setting is to formulate the problem very carefully. So you need to tell it what exactly it is building, what it can do, what the constraints are. And in this context, again, it becomes important to think about how you could build such indefinite causal structures other than just saying, I wrote down a process matrix. So specifically, I want to look at, three concrete questions. Firstly, can we take a process matrix and build something within known physics that's analogous to it? Specifically in the sense of allowing us to read off the measurement statistics that parties interacting with this process would see from their instruments, and the states that would exist on the wires being ferried back and forth. And moreover, especially in this context of getting AI to build something like that, how do we test for a given matrix whether it actually corresponds to a valid physical process? So these are the questions, and the talk consists of four steps. Basically, I'm going to do a quick recap of some properties of process matrices and then talk about what exactly the proposal is, how I think one could use resonators as these analogs, how to check whether a given process is a valid physical process or just some generic map, and finally, whether or how we can read off the states that exist around this process. Okay, so some things about process matrices. The first comment I got was that, yes, time runs this way, so in case that was puzzling. Generally, you've got the process matrix, you've got some local labs connected to it with Hilbert spaces. Inside the local labs, you can put instruments that produce outputs. Generally, you could also have a choice of instruments, some classical variable coming in from the outside. I'm going to ignore these for now. You can subsume them in the choice of the instrument. Right, the first step I'm going to need is to go from this picture, how you might maybe most conventionally draw a process matrix, and take these wires and twist them around a bit to turn it into this kind of picture. So we've got the process matrix with several Hilbert spaces that come into the process, several Hilbert spaces that go out. Some of them go through local labs and then loop around to come back to the process matrix. Others might just come from some global past and proceed to a global future. But the important thing here is that all of this you can basically lump together into one huge CPTP map. And the only thing that's left outside the CPTP map, which is the most interesting part, are these causal loops that take Hilbert space back into the past. And of course, the condition for this to work, the condition that determines which states can actually exist on these Hilbert spaces, and consequently also the measurement statistics you might see in the local labs, is a consistency condition that says whatever the state might be here, it's got to match the one that you put in here. And this is precisely the physicality condition. So normally this is written in terms of, by saying that the process matrix is a supermap from the instruments to probabilities of outcomes of the instruments. So you can write in terms of a trace. with the operators non-coercive A and B representing the tri-states corresponding to the instruments. And in terms of these probabilities, the consistency condition can be understood very nicely as saying that the probability of getting any outcome in the local measurements has to sum up to one. Or mathematically, the trace of the process matrix with the local instruments needs to work out to one if these are basically trace preserving. Okay, just a quick recap of the tri isomorphism. I don't think I need to go through this. The one thing I'm going to need is the identity channel, coercive I, and its tri isomorphic state with suitable transposition conventions being this maximally entangled state. So of this form, it's going to appear later. Okay, just a quick comment on the existing implementation, of course, of the quantum switch. I think this debate has already been had sufficiently. So you can think of the implementations as being sort of unfolded like this, with the system going either through an early instance of A or a late instance of A, and conversely through B. And this sort of unfolding into two separate instances is controversial. I think I'll leave it at that. But there's also a second reason I would like to go beyond this, which is that while the quantum switch is interesting, it doesn't violate causal inequalities. Therefore, we know that there exists a whole class of processes that are more interesting in this sense, and it would be nice to see if we can also find implementations of those. And finally, the second part of the title, post-selection. So again, it's been mentioned before, you can implement these causal loops, closed time-like curves, depending on context, you might call them different things, using teleportation / post-selection. However, this is not quite what I would wish for a few reasons. One is post-select, if you're allowed to post-select, you can post-select on just about anything happening. So it's too powerful. In particular, it makes it a bit tricky to think about causal connections. If you're post-selecting, it tends to muddle things. And if you're thinking about implementations and trying to get statistics and maybe communication tasks, it's relevant to know that, of course, this post-selection only succeeds with a certain probability. In particular, in the case of a process matrix that satisfies this condition, it succeeds with probability that goes quadratically in the dimension of whatever goes around the loop. So it's not exactly efficient. Good. Okay, so what's the idea then? Summarizing the picture of a process matrix that I constructed, I said we can put the process as well as anything the local labs might do together into a single big map, so that the only thing left outside the map is this loop that goes back into the past, if you assume global background time. And the tricky part is to ensure that consistency holds, so that the state going out on the right is the same as the state that came in on the left. Now, this kind of consistency condition is actually satisfied naturally by another physical system that I spent way too much time on when I was teaching basic quantum mechanics, namely, say, an electron going round an atomic nucleus. The wave function goes round as a function of the azimuthal angle phi, and when you complete 2π, it has to match up. And if you look at the stationary states of some quantum system that has a spatial coordinate here, it does that naturally. So the question is, can we exploit that? Now, in order to make these two things match up more closely, to form a useful analogy, you need to make a few kind of obvious modifications. Firstly, this only supports a single wave function. So instead, we might say, let's assume we have two modes here, for example, spin up and spin down. And moreover, we want to make sure that the relative probability of finding one mode or the other as we go around this loop doesn't change. So that effectively we can say we just have a single qubit state that tells us how much is the red mode, how much is the blue mode, possibly with a phase, regardless of this angle phi. So if you think of this as a resonator that really has a spatial extension, you want to make sure that the Hamiltonian governing the wave function on the part that goes around the ring doesn't really change this state, so that we can just summarize it as a single qubit. But of course, the more important thing we're missing is this map down here. So what you could do is, yes?
Another difference maybe is that one is a looping space and the other is a looping time.
Yes, that is, I guess, the fundamental difference. I'm hoping that it won't have any practical implications. If it does, then the analogy will work strictly worse. I mean, if you pick up on any difference due to this fact, then please let me know. Okay, so aside from the fact that this is space and this, sorry, this is time and this is space, you've got this map here that enforces some non-trivial relationship between the state here and the state here. And analogously, you could say, I'm going to mess with the Hamiltonian in some region of space here, such that it changes the relationship between the wave functions here and the wave functions here, enforcing some particular boundary condition that I want. And if I build that, then this is my claim. The stationary states of this spatial arrangement should reveal the consistent states that can exist on this loop in time.
You have classical loops in space, you don't have classical loops in time, so there are some differences.
What do you mean by classical loops?
In space, you make a circle, that's a loop in space.
Yes?
You cannot do it in time, classically, so there are some differences after all.
Okay.
You
Maybe you
said there
could.
are only differences in classical description, but not in quantum description. Quantum is the same thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure I followed. Maybe you could tell me more afterwards. Okay, so just a minor caveat, when you think of it this way and look at this wave function here, one thing that could happen is that, well, you're actually going to have several, a whole spectrum of stationary states simply due to the fact that you can fit different numbers of different wavelengths in this ring part of it. And this is not what we care about, so we're just going to confine it to the ground state. But aside from that, if you look at the ground states, they should reveal the consistent states. So you can think about how you actually implement these maps. For example, one of the most basic elements you might have in your circuit is a trace. So you have states coming in on one side, and then you want to do something such that they just end, but you don't exclude one state or another. So the trace should, you know, work with the same probability for any incoming state. So what you do in terms of Hamiltonian is simply say any incoming state gets zero energy. Similarly, when you have a preparation, for example, of a pure state, you might actually penalize one state by saying this state of this component of the wave function is going to have a higher energy, and only one of the states has zero energy. If you want to look at a mixed state, you can introduce an ancilla and give zero energy to some entangled state with the ancilla, and then ignore the ancilla. You want to implement unitaries, it gets a little bit more complicated because you're going to be looking at states on both sides. For example, if you want to implement a Z-gate, or an identity gate for that matter, it's going to say that the state with zero on the left and zero on the right has zero energy, and the state with one on both sides has zero energy, but the sort of flipped states where you have zero on this side but one on this side and vice versa, they should be penalized. And using these elements, you can construct, for example, a von Neumann-style measurement where you introduce an ancilla, you initialize it in a zero state as described here, couple it to your principal register with unitary as described here, and the output of the ancilla serves as your readout. So with these elements, you can construct the resonator equivalent of a map and look at what kinds of states you get. So, for example, if you simply plug in the identity here, that means any state on this resonator is allowed. So, if we think of this as a qubit, then you've got a full two-dimensional space of states that fit on the resonator that are consistent. If, on the other hand, you're looking at a Z-gate, then the zero state, which is in red here, comes out with the same phase and it fits up. Whereas the one state goes on with one phase here, but comes out with the opposite phase. And once you go to the top, you see that it doesn't match up. So, in other words, the one state is going to be penalized by the fact that wave function doesn't match up. And what we see in the end is that only the zero state is consistent. So far, it seems to work nicely. And of course, these two examples are actually situations that do not correspond to valid processes. You can't just have a single causal loop going back in time. That's a recipe for a paradox. And similarly, if you just apply a unitary gate, it doesn't work either. So now let's go back to the question of under which conditions do these correspond to actually valid processes? And one way to look at this is to rewrite this probability, this trace, in terms of the entire map that I introduced here, but saying that this map is combined with an identity, which of course should make a difference, and using the choice state corresponding to the identity channel to rewrite this probability, this sort of checksum, in terms of matrix elements. So what we're going to demand is that if I apply the map M to each matrix element and then trace again with the transpose of that matrix element, I get out one. For comparison, if you look at simply the condition for a normal sort of linear forward and time trace preserving map, it looks a bit different because you simply take any trace one density operator, you apply the map to that, and then you sum over the diagonal elements and demand that this be one. So something different is happening here. And to get an idea of what this is, let's look at the example of a single qubit undergoing a Z gate. So if you write out these terms here, you get four terms, 0, 0, 1, 1, and two cross terms that appear when you take the coherences, 0, 1, or 1, 0, and put them through the map. And you can see that this works out to 0. It's not 1. Therefore, this is not a valid process. And yes?
Sorry, I may have missed it. What is the click?
Oh, so the physicality condition can be interpreted as saying the probability of getting any outcome in the local measurements has to be 1. So if I apply a trivial measurement where I simply sort of take the union of all outcomes, then that measurement should always produce some outcome, so a click. Does that make sense?
So it's the probability for all of the...
The probability of getting any outcome in the local measurements, basically. Yeah.
What is the spatial analog of the click?
That's what I'm trying to work out. So it, yes? Right. I've kind of abstracted away the outputs. So
you want it to be one, the probability of one. You want it to be one.
Yes. Yes. So in the conventional account of a process matrix, you've got the process matrix, and then you've got systems going through, say, two local laboratories. And inside those laboratories, Alice and Bob can apply some instrument that could have, say, two or three outcomes. And I can look at the probability distribution over outcomes of those two instruments. And I want to make sure that when I sum over all the possible combinations of outcomes, I get one. So in other words, if Alice and Bob were to apply kind of trivial instruments that always produce a particular outcome whenever a system comes through the lab, then I want to make sure that these uninformative outcomes are produced with probability one.
So there are projected measurements going on in A2 and A3.
Yes. I mean, in general, when I talk about processes, I give the local parties the freedom to choose what they want to do, but I have to allow them the option of applying, for example, projective measurements.
So if they were unitaries, then what would be the click?
If they were unitaries, I guess I wouldn't hear a click in that
they
sense.
Actually do something. Could they apply?
I mean, I guess I could do the following. Given a unitary, I could say I'm going to build a box that applies this unitary and also checks whether a system came through. You know, some counter that can in general become entangled, so that's coherent. And once the system passes through, it goes to one. And I want to make sure that after everything's said and done, this counter is certainly in the one state. Yeah, and I'm expecting that this condition of the loop kind of closing up, you know, everything matching, should be connected to whether I have consistent states on the resonator and probably the structure, for example, whether I have one, whether it's pure, mixed, whether I have several, a whole subspace of them, something to that effect. But before looking at that, I just want to look at sort of the purely process side of it. Okay, so if I take a Z gate, then the 0-0 state just stays the same, the one state just stays the same, but the coherences between the two pick up a minus phase. And this I can think of as being the problem that leads to this outcome being zero rather than what it should be. So the fact that when I take this, the coherence matrix element 0-1 and put it through a Z gate, the fact that it flips its phase, that I can think of as the reason why just a single loop with a Z gate on it is not a valid physical process. So this sign here basically is the grandfather paradox. And the curious thing is that normally if I was just going forward in time and I took this coherence, the 0-1 matrix element and put it through, the fact that I get a negative phase doesn't really bother me. It only bothers me because this part with a negative phase actually loops back, and then I see that it doesn't match up. So the fact that I have a phase between the state before the gate and afterwards makes a difference. So in a sense, it's as if I had coherences across the gate in this hand wavy vague sense. Okay, a second example is of course the identity gate. Here we have kind of the opposite problem. So the 0-1 and 1-0 terms in the density matrix do come out with a plus sign, but here it turns out I have sort of too much of a good thing and I get out 4 instead of 1. So in some sense, if too many states are allowed on this loop, then I also violate the physicality condition. And finally, just to give a third example, if I perform a measurement in the Z basis, then if my input was the 0 state, I get 0. If my input was the 1 state, I get 1. And coherences are completely eliminated, and that also doesn't quite do the trick. So this is just to illustrate, maybe give an intuition for what this form of the physicality condition means. Another way of looking at it, at least in the case of a single qubit, is to note that you can decompose this unnormalized choice state of the identity channel in terms of Pauli operators. And when you plug this into the rewritten click probability, you find out that it turns into this form. So I'm basically looking at what happens when I apply the map to each Pauli operator and then taking the trace with that same Pauli operator. So in terms of a Blossphere picture, it's essentially the projection of these. I start with the axes, apply the map, and then project them back onto the same axes. So I can probably give some more or less inconvenient geometrical interpretation for this condition that this sum of the three axes must be zero, but it may be more intuitive to consider that if I just specify a process matrix, and I haven't yet specified what Alice and Bob might be doing in their local labs, then I have to allow in particular that they might apply generic unitaries. In other words, for a given process matrix, I don't just demand that this is zero for some particular choice of unitary, but in fact that it is zero for any unitary I might combine it with. And these unitaries would just rotate this ellipsoid. And the bottom line is that in order for a process to be valid, I actually have to make sure that it projects the entire blossphere down to a single point in the case of a single qubit. I haven't quite worked out whether or how this might generalize to higher dimensional space. It's probably going to get worse, but it seems nicely geometric for this simpler case. Okay, so this tells us when a process matrix is going to be valid. Now let's come back to the resonators and look at how the consistent states on a resonator match up with states that are allowed on the temporal loops. Simplest case you might think are unitary maps, for example, in the identity. If you look at the resonator, it says for any state I might have, the energy is zero. So all states, our ground states of the resonator are consistent. Everything's fine. And similarly, looking at the map, all states are fixed points of the map, so the two match up. In particular, as I noted before, the fact that the entire space of possible states is in fact constituted of ground states or consistent states or fixed points implies that this is not a valid process matrix. But the main point here is that this identification between the resonator states and the loop states holds. Slightly more interesting example, the single qubit Z-gate. Here, as I pointed out before, I'm going to penalize the one state with some above zero energy. And this leads me to have only a single consistent state, namely the zero state. However, if I look at the map, when I apply it to zero state, I get zero. But if I apply a Z-gate to the one state, I also get the one state. And this means that I have not only two discrete points, but in fact an entire axis between these two of fixed points. So one thing to notice here is that the fixed points that satisfy this condition do not necessarily coincide with the points or the states that are ground states or that are consistent around the loop. Right, and again, as I said before, this is also not a consistent state, not a valid process, because in this case, I have, in some sense, too few consistent states. You can generalize this to generic unitaries, where, again, you might find that depending on these phases, some states will be non-penalized, so you will have generally a set of orthogonal ground states, and a larger space of fixed points. And again, generally, this will not be a valid process. Okay, so far for unitaries. Now, clearly, since we have determined that generally they're not valid processes, the interesting processes must be the ones where it gets noisy. So first, you might try and keep it simple. Look at the processes whose fixed points are pure states. But when you think about that for a minute, if I had two fixed points that are pure states, then the entire axis between them should also be constituted of fixed points. And therefore, if I have a single, if I demand that all my fixed points are pure states, that entails that I actually, in fact, only have a single fixed point. So you can think of this as a circuit or a resonator in this case that traces out what comes in on one side and re-prepares a pure state on the other side. And so it's pretty easy to see that it's going to have a single ground state, namely the state that I re-prepare, and also a single fixed point. And this, it turns out, is actually a valid process for once. But then the most general class is going to be the case where I can also have mixed fixed points. And this is where it gets more confusing, I think. So a simple example here. Consider this situation where you have a system. First, you apply an x-gate, so you flip the bit. And then you're going to measure it in the z-basis. And then you let it loop around. And you would think that this supports a consistent state, namely the maximally mixed state. If I flip it, doesn't do anything. If I measure it, doesn't do anything because it's already decohered. So that should be fine. But if you look at what happens when you try to build this resonator, something seems to go wrong. Because on the one hand, you've got this element of the resonator, which is going to penalize the minus state with some strictly positive term EX. And therefore, the only state that would be allowed, just based on this element, is the plus state on this loop. But on the other hand, I also have this circuit element, which is going to apply a measurement by penalizing the states wherein the loop and the ancilla are in different states and only allowing either zero on both or one on both, or generally entangled states between the two. And if you either look at these for a second or maybe sit down and do the math, it turns out that the lowest energy state of the system has energy greater than zero. So in other words, there is no state on this kind of loop with these elements here slotted in that has zero energy that satisfies both conditions at the same time. And this is a bit strange because you can write down this state and you would think that it works. But what happens here is a bit more subtle, because on the one hand, the x element says the only thing I'm going to allow is a superposition of 0 and 1 on this register. But on the other hand, this element demands that the state here be entangled with the state here. So I can't just have a superposition here. It's going to be entangled. But that, again, doesn't work for the x. So somehow, the fact that I'm looping this around and I'm demanding, on the one hand, superposition here, but also entanglement here, that doesn't quite work out. So I can't have this mixed state, which should work, because the way I would lose the coherence is by entangling with the ancilla. But if I entangle with the ancilla, then the state of the ancilla, whether it's 0 or 1, is going to provide a sort of tag on the two components on the loop, and that doesn't work with the superposition anymore. So this is the point where I don't quite understand the implications anymore. I would be very interested in discussing to see whether maybe somebody else understands them better. But there seems to be something funny going on with mixtures on the loop, because normally we think of mixtures as arising because I have some larger entangled system, part of which I trace out. But if that ancilla that I trace out is outside of the loop, then things go funny. I think that's the most articulate thing I can say. Question?
I mean, if it's just the diagonal state that goes through, it doesn't have not given. What would happen if you split which was the control and which was the
Well, I would normally assume that this guy out here is initialized in a fixed state. There's nothing loopy going on with it. So if I start with a fixed state and then control on it to do something, that just boils down to a fixed unitary being applied.
So it would then be consistent with
that? Well, in that case, I think I wouldn't get a mixed state, because if I just have a bunch of unitaries on the loop here, that's either allows one pure state or several, but I have no way of getting something mixed, I would think.
Okay.
Yeah, and like I said, these two conditions are incompatible and there are no consistent states at all, even though we think that the mixed state should be allowed. And yeah, this is where it ends. So just to summarize the main points. So I'm suggesting that you can take a process, twist it around to look like this with the causal loops, and build a resonator in space that is analogous to it in the sense that it can reveal the measurement statistic that these guys in their local labs would get, that it can tell us which states exist on the loop that are compatible with all these constraints, and allow us to test whether a given process in conjunction with a number of local labs is physical. And in the process of trying to make this work out, there are two main observations. One is that saying that something is a fixed state of this map is not actually the same as saying that it's going to be consistent around the loop. And the bigger strange thing is the fact that somehow whether I have a phase between the state here and the state here makes a difference, unlike what we're used to from linear forwards in time maps. And it seems to be somehow connected to whether I can have mixed state on this loop here, in particular if I try to implement them by entangling with something outside the loop. And yeah, everything beyond that is an open question, so thank you.
Questions?
Yes?
So I guess the first would be a comment that, and then this issue of space, mm-hmm. matching up in space versus time, I think this is because you're assuming the thing, you used the term stationary solution. So this evolves to some stationary solution. The resonator only supports certain states.
Yes.
right? But that occurs over time. You have to put them in, and then they go around, and the ones that are supported are supported, and the ones that aren't
dissipate
and go away.
So
this thing evolves into the consistent state over time, unlike if it was a time loop where it kind of is supposed to evolve into that state.
Yes.
Without time, because it's going, you know, there is no time involved in it because the loop is going back in time.
But I guess even for the spatial version, I can look at it and analyze it theoretically and see these are the states that it would support. So I'm not sure whether I need this evolving towards the stationary states.
Yes, so I guess that was my second question. It seems like you're calculating beforehand what states are going to be supported rather than allowing the system to decide what states.
Right. So, I mean, if it turns out that this works and I actually were to build an experiment, then I would really just set it up and, you know, let it evolve and see which states are left in the end, basically. But before I do that, I want to make sure that the consistent states on the spatial loop actually do match the consistent states on a temporal loop. And for that purpose, I think it's easier to calculate them. And I mean, if afterwards we build it and it turns out there's a difference between our calculation and the experiment, that's also interesting. Does that address your question?
Yeah, well, I guess I'm just, what I mean is, if you build a thing and you put light into it, then something will happen, regardless of whether they're consistent or not.
Yes, so
build up or they won't build up. There'll be certain states that will build up and certain states that won't.
So what I think should happen is that you will definitely get some kind of state, but the question is, what are the energies of those states? So for example, if you look at the identity, just a plain resonator, you will see that you get a bunch of states. In fact, any state, for example, if you want to do it with light, you can think of polarization. You could have vertical states, horizontal states, left, right, whatever you want. And this tells you that there are consistent states, but in fact that there are too many consistent states. So the example I showed with the identity map, assessing its physicality, that it had too many terms and you'd get more than one in the end. Anyway, it's a minor point.
No, but that is, so what does too many mean?
Too many in the...
No, I know mathematically
you've got
four. But
yes.
What does that mean in terms of the process matrix?
So let me just go back here. There's a kind of complementarity. Yes, here. Because if you sum up an identity channel, a Z gate, an X gate, and a Y gate, you get a noisy channel. And this means that there's a kind of complementarity between this sum here, this one, and if I were to write out the other two for X and Y, you'd see that they actually sum up to four, which is what they should do. It's only that the numbers are sort of not evenly distributed between them. And in that sense, I have too many here, in the same sense as I have too few here, because of, so in this case here, the grandfather paradox rules out one possibility. That's why I have too few here, and here I've got sort of the complement of having too many. So if all options are allowed, that's not actually physically valid.
I think it's related to what you have asked. So imagine that you want to show this process something interesting, violating some inequalities, let's say, you know, that's very general. Usually you have to choose then different choices, different settings, sorry. Now there are two problems. You can try to find a consistent solution for each of these.
Different choices of instruments in the local labs?
Or the local labs.
Yes.
Local labs.
Yeah.
So now you can try to find the consistent solutions for any choice of the setting in the local lab. Or you want to find solution that will be jointly satisfied by both maps. Like one single, for example, at least one single
Yes.
solution
that will be consistent for both of them. And now, physically, what I think what will happen if you put a light and so on, what you was saying is that whatever you do there will be some consistent solution after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end, I'm not sure if you violate any inequalities, what this statement will be, or about which process, if by changing local maps, there will be self kind of consistency after a while in a space loop. So which process do we then test?
I'm not sure I followed the entirety of the question, but let me pick up on one point that I think I got. You're saying that if I build a particular, like the analog of a particular process matrix, which let's assume is valid, and I plug in something in the local labs, I put this in the resonator, I put in the light, and I get out some consistent state. What might happen is that I only get a consistent state by, okay, so for example, if I look at the, at the Z-gate, I said that the one state here is going to come in with one phase and goes out with the opposite phase, and that doesn't match up. But in fact, you can get a consistent wave function for the one state if you simply change the wavelength. If you make it such that there's one half wave more here, so make the wavelength a bit shorter, then you will find a consistent state again. So what this tells us is that you can compensate for there not being a consistent state in this form by increasing the energy a bit, but you will notice that. So if you look at the states you found and you test whether they actually have zero energy or something more, you should be able to distinguish whether this is sort of a properly consistent state or just something compensating for it. If there are other examples where this doesn't work, that would be good to know.
The kinds of circuits, or I guess pseudo circuits you get where you have these things which are like gates, but they're really constraints. They look a little bit like signal flow graphs. Have you encountered these things before? So there's something studied in engineering where really your nodes are constraints.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can think of this as like a function where I'm doing something at the input, getting some outputs. But when you have loops, these things can be very wild and have undefined effects.
So people have studied this?
Yeah, I think even going back to the 70s, there was...
I mean, specifically the presence of loops in these...
Yeah. So there's kind of theorems about controllability and... kind of,
nice.
Anyway, maybe...
Yeah, thanks.
If I understand correctly, you're trying to sort of find an analog model of time loops.
Yes.
Where the basic structure, you try to impose your operations and time evolution as ground states, as arising from ground states of some Hamiltonian.
Yep.
So this seems maybe the most direct analogy with time loopy things is with this timeless formulation, because there exactly you have that your time states are the solutions of the constraint equation h psi equals zero.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty sure that to make the analogy a bit tighter, one can consider a timeless formulation of these loops, and then you might have a more direct analogies. And then I suppose in these timeless loops, you can have also non-valid things that might be corresponding to cross-selected CTC and so on, which you also can simulate.
Yeah, I was trying to work out especially how this, the last example with the mixed state and the entanglement, what that might look like in the timeless formulation, and I haven't figured out a way to do it without getting confused. So.
Yeah, it's hard to move on, so let's take a